Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the Nonprofit Architect. I'm your host, Travis Johnson, here today with Tim Preby from TNS Online Marketing. Tim, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic, Travis. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing better than average, that's for sure. If you like the things that Tim has to say, we're going to have quotes on a t-shirt available to you later at reallydesigns.biz. But there'll be a link in the show notes where you can go get your favorite Tim Preby quotes. And hey, if you don't like the t-shirt, that's fine. You can support us on patreon.com/nonprofitarchitect. I'm just happy and thankful to be online with Tim today, talking across 8 time zones, but somehow a 9-hour difference. Thank you, daylight savings time. It's just after Thanksgiving, right into December, and we're talking marketing today.
All right. Well, what do you want to start off with, Travis?
I want to know what it is that you do as a online marketing consultant.
Well, I like to say as little as possible because I have a great team and I try to get them to do all the real work. But occasionally I do have to do some work myself. In reality, kind of real high level, the 6 things that we tend to help people with are websites, social media, email marketing, SEO, which is all about how and where you show up in Google, online video, and blogging. And so those are the main 6 things we help with. A lot of our clients will just have us do one-off, help them with setup or strategy. Some of our clients will have us do consulting and training. And then some of us are just like, nope, we want you to manage it. We want to be hands-off or as hands-off as we can be, which we don't work well with people that want to be completely hands-off. But as long as they'll have some involvement, want us to do the bulk of the work. So really any range in there. End up working with a lot of nonprofits. That was kind of accidental initially, kind of not, but have really enjoyed it over the years. Although they don't make up the bulk of our revenue, they probably make up about half of our clients. So we love working, definitely love working with them.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know we got connected through Shannon Whittington, who was on the board of Books by Vets with. And if you are listening to this, you can check out Shannon Whittington on episode number 8 at nonprofitarchitect.org and listen to our podcast and our talk about, you know, some of it was my time on the board there. And it was very, very interesting. But someone in your shoes that does marketing for a living, you have the potential to touch and interact with all sorts of facets. And you already mentioned the nonprofit things that you do. What are some of the things that nonprofits are just not doing right on the marketing space?
A lot of who we work with ends up being smaller nonprofits just because especially because we used to have some very specific deals for websites for nonprofits. We still do. It just kind of works a little differently where it's not as cut and dried anymore. But we would get a lot of nonprofits that thought they couldn't afford a good website come to us and then find out, oh, we can afford a good website. And probably those size nonprofits, the number one mistake I see is just that their websites don't look great. And listen, you don't have to have like the highest end website by any means, but your website is your first impression. And people assume that if not serious about your website and the face you're putting forward for your mission and for what you're trying to accomplish, then maybe you're not that serious about your mission. Not everyone's going to assume that, obviously, but there are definitely enough people that will assume that, that kind of investing, and it can be time, right? You can invest your own time in just becoming really, getting a really good looking website if you don't have money. But often you can find someone that'll do a professional looking job that will do it either for free or for discounted, or just work with you on payment arrangements somehow. And so don't assume you have to do it yourself. But yeah, that's the mistake we see a lot of nonprofits is they, just their website does not look professional. And it could be like a nephew of a board member or something did it, right? That happens a lot as well. But you've got to be cognizant of that is your first impression that you make to most people that will hear about your mission, or maybe your second, right? It may be that they hear about it and then they Google you. But if they can't find you, or it doesn't look good once they do find you, that's going to make a impact.
I think it's important and it matters who actually does the work on your website. And the reason I say who, not as in which person, but how accessible are they? How easy is it for them to update your website? And do you have a existing arrangement for updates to a website?
Yes.
I talked to someone today on their nonprofit website, and I had been giving money for people that have sold t-shirts, and one individual wanted me to give the money that he earned to a different nonprofit. I said, sure, no problem. And I went to his website and I said, hey man, I can't find a giving button. And he's like, well, I don't have a giving button on my nonprofit website. And I was like, well, that's okay. Do you have a PayPal or a way to accept a digital payment? I'm obviously over in the Middle East right now, and I can't just, hand him cash. And he's like, well, I actually don't have that either. And, we're kind of joking and poking fun a little bit, but there's people that are going to be in that situation where they haven't figured out how to do that yet, or they've got the 501c3 up and running, but they're making it difficult for people to give them money.
Right.
And I can just recommend that just hands out that never make it hard for people to give you money.
Absolutely.
Never make it hard for people to give you money. And what kind of advice do you have for someone that needs an update, but they can't get a hold of the person? Or what kind of pre-existing arrangement would you assume should be put in place? How do you work that sort of thing with someone like a small nonprofit?
Now, that's a great question. So that is, both of those things you mentioned are problems we see when they come to us. And most of the time, it's the whole website is unprofessional. And so they'll come to us, and as a result, it won't have a donate button. Or, and I say donate button, but whatever that looks like. Or maybe they even have a great looking website, but they can't get a hold of their person because it was donated or whatever. That's what we see most of the time. If it looks good, but they are complaining, it's because it was donated and they can't get any ongoing support. And so we just see that all the time. And actually, it causes a problem for nonprofits more so than if they had just gone out and paid for a website. And I've been on boards where that's happened. And obviously, I've been on the marketing end of things where I'm getting a phone call because the donation of the website looked great initially, but caused problems long term. And so always need to ask about, hey, what is maintenance for this going to look like? And a lot of times, from my end of things, from the marketing company, if someone says, well, this is great, but what would maintenance look like after this point? I'll say, well, here's how much that would be and what it would include. Oh, great. And they may be perfectly willing to pay for it. And so from the nonprofit standpoint, I would say, just be willing to ask. Don't assume it's going to be more than you can afford. It might be more than you can afford, but don't assume it's going to be more than you can afford, and see if they'll work out some way just to make sure, because a lot of the marketing company's perspective is, oh, we donated this nonprofit, so I assume they're not going to want to pay for support. Well, the nonprofit is like, no, this is important. If a thing is important enough, then they'll pay for it. And so, from the nonprofit standpoint, just know ahead of time, ask those questions ahead of time. What is updating going to look like? But specifically to your donating online point, absolutely. Ask the company that you're working with, or if you're doing it yourself, do something. I mean, at the minimum, get a PayPal account set up, even if it's not a nonprofit PayPal account, right? That actually takes some hoops to jump through. But even just a normal PayPal account where, yes, you do have to pay a little more on the percentage, but you're getting money, right, that you wouldn't get otherwise. So go ahead and get at least that set up and linked to from your website so that people can donate online.
What I've seen, especially from young nonprofits, is they've not done this before. They've not run a business before. They've not run a nonprofit before. They've not set up a website before. So you might get something that's donated or worked on once, and a few weeks into it, you realize it's just not really set up the way that you thought it would be, or the way that it really needs to be.
Right.
Because you are not really the user. when someone goes to check it out, they're like, hey man, like I can't find the thing, or I got to click through six different menus to get to your store or your donate or whatever the thing is, or I can't find your mission on here. Now, as a nonprofit or even as a business, you're stuck trying to solve some problem you didn't even know you had. Right. You just paid for it. You just got to donate. It just got done. It's 3 weeks live and it's garbage. This is not what you need. And, you know, that's a place that we don't want you to be at. So if you talk to someone like Tim and get ongoing maintenance fees, that's something that you could avoid. Now, I know you mentioned social media, and I've talked to a few media experts already, and there's a big thing that they talk about is congruence between your social media and your website. What can you tell us about that setup?
Sure. So not sure what their take was on it, but there's a few different aspects to it. In my mind, the biggest one that people don't think about. So like, let's take Facebook. Facebook is an easy example just because so many people are on it. Facebook, when you create a what they call a company page, gives you the opportunity to customize your profile picture and then that banner up top, right? Your cover photo. And so if someone finds you, let's say someone finds you through Facebook and then they want to go to your website. If they go to Facebook, and let's say your goal is just for them to donate. Let's say that's your only goal. You'd love a $5 donation online after someone hears about your mission. So they go to your Facebook, they find out about you, they go to your website, and let's say it looks different. Let's say it's the same organization name, but it looks completely different because your website was done, whatever. You're working on Facebook on an ongoing basis because you can't get a hold of your web guy and maybe your logo changed or you change your colors or whatever. They go to your website and it's different. What happens is people get confused. If there's not that brand identity, the visual brand where it looks the same in both places, people will start to doubt, am I in the place that I meant to go to? Because people assume, not everyone, but a lot of people will assume, oh, maybe I clicked on the wrong thing, right? We've all talked to people that are scared of computers. And so that's a real issue across all age ranges. But there are definitely people that are wired, and that's one extreme, is scared of computers. But there are definitely people who are wired to think, did I do that right? Now, I'm always going to assume that the thing is screwed up, right? Because I know what I'm doing as a professional. But there are definitely people that get confused. And the deal is confused people don't take action. So if people are confused, they're not going to donate, they're not going to sign up for your email newsletter on your site, whatever your goal is, they're not going to read more about your mission because they're confused. And so how you eliminate that confusion is you use the same colors, the same graphics, the same pictures. I mean, so tell me this, Travis, have you ever been on Facebook, clicked on a link, and the thumbnail you saw on Facebook was different from the picture you actually see when you go to the website? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, I've seen that, and I've seen broken links.
Yes, broken links as well. Either of those, you go and you're like, oh, well, this can't be what I meant to click on. They must have changed it. Even if you don't think it was you, you think something's wrong, right? And so that's what even something small like having the same thumbnail image and then the same picture on the page they link to is huge. But definitely Facebook gives you the opportunity to do that. You know, put your logo or whatever in the profile picture area of your page and put your some big branded graphic, same color, same type of thing. And so that's a lot of what we'll do as far as telling people, why is it important that it look the same? Well, that's why, because you don't want to confuse people, because confused people don't take action.
It's crazy because it takes a lot to maintain congruency, because you might be a person with a nonprofit. You have a personal page and then you have a professional page. Mm-hmm. Then you have a Facebook business page. And off that, you have a Facebook group for the whatever reason. Sure. And all of those things should match. If you have a personal page, you shouldn't have, if you're putting, you know, what, you know, cat memes and what I ate for dinner, your chances are you shouldn't have that linked to any of the other stuff. You should keep that separate. But in something as simple as the banner of your Facebook group, if someone clicks on it, it should have a link to your website. Whatever action you're wanting them to take, like my most desired action for whatever person is there, if it's to sign up to your email list, if it's to be a member of the group, if it's to find your podcast or your blog or whatever your thing is, that link should be in your banner photo and your profile photo and should be pinned to the top of your Facebook. But all that stuff has to match across platforms.
Right.
And if you're trying to do something like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn and Snapchat and YouTube and the list just goes on and on and on, then all of that stuff also has to be congruent and it all has to have links to whatever it is your desired action is, donate email list or whatever have you, and all of it has to work. I just spent some time, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that, I went through my podcast site and none of the links went to the place that I thought they were going to.
Oh, no.
I copied a link in from like the Facebook link to the page to the thing. So there was like that added layer in between with a redirect site. Anyway, it made it confusing and it didn't work the way it should work. I had to go through, adjust my settings, make sure I had the organic web address, and then click the feature that allows it to open a new window or open a new tab when you click on it. And that's a whole, you know, background behind the scenes stuff that allows your timeline page to be more and all those things. But even me, the guy that talks about podcast stuff, had to go back through and double check his stuff. That stuff happens.
Right.
It's not a, I can't believe this happened, this isn't a freak out moment, but you have to check. And then once you check, you have to fix it.
Yeah. It's been, 15 plus years since the web was a set it and forget it type place. That doesn't work anymore. I mean, literally if you set a website up and forget it, a lot of times it'll get hacked eventually now. So there's a lot. It is not, and arguably maybe it shouldn't have been even 10, 15 years ago, but definitely today it's not a set it and forget it thing because, I mean, part of it is just we rely on so much of that interconnectedness because there are so many options. So we're using this service, then we have our website and then we're doing Facebook. And if any one of those places changes things, different things might break. And so you've got to keep an eye on those things or have a professional that's doing that for you. But definitely you have to keep an eye on those things on an ongoing basis. And you bring up a good point in that. So just a couple weeks ago, I was helping a nonprofit organization get their messaging kind of consistent across all the platforms. And we'd actually built out a full digital marketing plan for them. And they had said, hey, can you include that? How much you charge, what order we should do these things in, what priority they are, and how much you charge for each of those. And so we did that. Normally we don't, unless somebody asks us, we don't include our prices in a digital marketing plan because we do charge for the plan. It turns out that has value. But the very first thing was you've got to get the same across the board on your different social platforms and your website. And so they didn't really have, they had very little control over their website. But the first thing we did was go in and make sure those the imagery was the same everywhere, but also just the text, the words they used, the phrases they used, how they talked about themselves. We wanted it to be obvious when someone got from one place to another place that they were in the right place. And so, but it takes time. And then the other issue you run into is the limitations on all the different platforms and the capabilities are not the same. So it's kind of, you'll do some back and forth in getting it to all work very similar, at least, to get it all set up. But it takes some work. You can do it on your own, definitely. I'm obviously a little biased towards using a professional, but it takes time. If you do it on your own, you got to invest some serious time and some back and forth. And there's going to be some frustration, definitely.
Oh, you mean frustration comes standard?
That's right. That's right.
I've definitely experienced a little bit of that, getting the podcast set up and working on a website, which you may or may not notice is currently not live because I don't know what I'm doing. So it's taking time to get it figured out.
Sure.
And that's just the way it goes. But what I do know is that social media platforms come and go. Obviously, MySpace was here for a short time and now it's, just a barren wasteland of no one really uses it anymore. At least if they do use it, they don't want to admit to using it. So I hear a lot about what it takes to actually collect something and keep something that can be yours as an asset. And that thing is emails.
Right.
Emails have not gone away. In fact, many people are touting this as the number one way to sell a new product and something like collecting an email and then using MailChimp in order to sell your product or your service or let people know an event is still really, really high on everyone's list. And I'm getting a head nod from you. Tim, tell us more about email lists and MailChimp.
Sure. So I will caution you, definitely, if you're talking mid-20s and lower, and that's your target market, email will not be your best option, just because we've kind of gone full circle where a lot of them just are not, they are not in email as much as people, you know, 25 plus. And I'm kind of, that's kind of an arbitrary, bit of an arbitrary line, but it's around, you know, mid-20s. But yes, so as long as we kind of exclude those people for a moment, or just assume that some of them will, some of them are going to be good on email and it will be ineffective. But overall, that age group, it's not the most effective. The rest of the age group, potentially it's the most effective thing, definitely has the most market saturation. I mean, when you think about the social media platforms, you have to have an email address to sign up for them. So the assumption is everyone coming in starts with an email address. And so as long as your email marketing is opt-in, and I'll explain what that means in a second, but as long as it's opt-in instead of opt-out, they've given you permission to actually reach out and stay in touch with them on a regular basis. Now, you want to set expectations up front. So like when they're opting in, you want them to know as much as they can what they're getting into. And so that keeps your unsubscribes from going down to that sort of thing. But as long as you do that, as long as you make clear the expectations and then follow through with whatever you committed to, you're consistent in what you send, then yeah, email marketing can definitely be huge. You and I were talking a little bit beforehand. It just so happens that today I'm actually teaching a class on email marketing. And so it is amazing the big perspective shift I have to instill in nonprofits, especially, is that they assume that their email newsletter should be all about them and their organization. And that's not the case at all. Any digital marketing, any marketing, but especially your email newsletter, you've got to think about what's in it for the recipient, right? And it could be feeling good, right? They're different, definitely different. Doesn't have to be like a monetary thing by any means, but you need to think about why are they subscribing? Why kind of that, what was that upfront agreement from their perspective? Why did they subscribe to this newsletter? I've got to keep fulfilling that perspective while suiting my needs too, from an organizational standpoint. And so definitely keeping in mind, And there are different things you can do. You can do what's called in the sales world lead magnets, right? Downloadable reports, that sort of thing. Different things where people will opt in. But all of those need to be framed around what is the expectation that the person will have once they subscribe, and what do I need to actually get out of this newsletter or out of this email list, this email marketing. There's also a whole lot of compliance issues. Fortunately, MailChimp by default. So if you're using MailChimp, that's actually our platform of choice. But if you're using MailChimp by default, it makes you do all the compliance stuff. So it's not going to be an issue. Can you go in and delete stuff and become non-compliant or otherwise known as illegal in certain countries? Yeah, you can. You definitely can do that. But by default, it'll help you with compliance. So using some sort of service, and not just doing it. So a lot of people start out just doing it through Outlook or Gmail or whatever, you know, through their inbox. And that's okay for a starting point, because in some ways it's more important to start than it is to get it exactly right at the beginning. But MailChimp has a free forever plan. Now, they have changed a lot of things in the last year where it's not, there are a bunch more limitations than there used to be. But if you get in now and you've never used it before, you won't even know. You won't be frustrated. The internet was outraged back in March or so because of all these changes. But if you get in, you won't even know about the changes, right? So it doesn't matter. But they are one of the few that have a free forever plan. So a bunch of the other sites, like probably a lot of people have heard of Constant Contact, for example. And I think they have like a 30-day free trial. Most of the other sites, it's a 30-day free trial. MailChimp, you can get it forever for free as long as you live within their limitations. And then kind of the spectrum of people that do pay, you're generally talking somewhere between $5 and $30 depending on the provider and a number of different things. If you're not getting $5 to $30 worth of return every month or more than that, then you're doing something wrong in the first place. So it should definitely be worth it. One of the other things that I get frequently asked is, okay, how often should I actually be sending out email? So the first, and of course, the prerequisite is the assumption is you're going to be consistent, right? So you do need to be consistent. Don't send them out sporadically. But what we've seen, especially in organizations where the email marketing is handled by someone who wears more than one hat in their organization, right? So the marketing is not their only responsibility. Maybe they're out there raising funds. Maybe they're running the whole nonprofit and doing the marketing, but they're wearing multiple hats. What we've seen is either to be both beneficial to them and sustainable, either once a month, twice a month, or weekly is about the frequencies we've seen work. So that's kind of the range that it falls in. So which one of those do you pick? Well, what you look at is the problems you solve, whatever the mission is of your organization, how often is that top of mind for your ideal recipient? Right, whoever that is, whether it's it could be, and it's normally a mix of these things, but it could be someone you want to donate. It could be that your email's targeted to the people you help. It could be it's targeted to potential volunteers, board members, that sort of thing. How often do they actually think about the issues that you're solving? And that tells you where on that scale you actually land as far as how often you send out email newsletters. But being consistent. And then the other thing is, it's, yes, it's going to be effort to put the newsletter together on an ongoing basis, but also you need to work on growing your newsletter list. There are times where it will grow itself, right? That happens. Some people are lucky. But in general, just the sales thing is always be closing. Always be asking people, hey, we have this newsletter. This is what it's about. Would you like me to sign you up? Don't worry. We make it easy to unsubscribe if it turns out you don't like it. Feel free to say no, but would you like me to add you to the list? And so just kind of be, especially when you're in your first group of people, kind of a 0 to 1,000, really, manually just asking people in person, through email, on social media can be huge. And then don't just send them a link and say, here you go, sign up. If they said yes and you have their email address, sign them up for it. Make it easier for them, right? You want to make it as easy as possible. So those are kind of some key aspects to email marketing that most nonprofits have not, especially starting nonprofits, have not thought through.
Something I did want to mention is if you are a nonprofit and you are running a Facebook group, read that as you should be running a Facebook group. You can have questions that appear when they request to be added to the group. And one of those things can be, what is your email? Right. And you can add them without them providing their email. But if you assume that they're going to provide it, then they have given you permission to use their email. Something else you mentioned where it depends on who your audience is. You might have a master list of everyone that you've ever come in contact with interested in participating in some level of your organization. And you'll have a master list. You should, in my opinion, and maybe Tim can back me up on this, is you should have sub-lists because you're going to have people that work for you, people that volunteer, people that are your general cheerleaders, and you might have someone like donors or concerned, you know, businesses of interest. And you're going to send marketing material of some variety to different levels to these people. If you come out with a new volunteer shirt, you're probably going to not want to send that to everyone. If you come out with a limited edition, you know, summer is upon us, or in this case, winter is upon us, limited time only offering t-shirt, man, send that to everybody. But if you're coming out with a, hey, this is your new swag logo sweatband for all my volunteers only, don't send that to your donors right. only list. Take that second, spell check, make sure your selected audience who you really want to receive whatever the message is that you're sending, make sure that goes up to the right group. There's nothing quite embarrassing like sending something to 4,000 of the wrong people.
Yes.
You might get some chatter. You might get some unsubscribes. You might get a couple of yeses, but mostly people are going to be confused, and right. you don't want that at all. Something I do want to mention is if you're doing some kind of newsletter, do not just tell them the good things that you are doing. If you have a mission and you have been doing great things, go ahead and put that in there. But also put where you need volunteers, where you could need some help, where you could need some donations of stuff. And then the area that you're not yet completing, it could be you don't have enough money to feed all the homeless people in your area. It could be that you don't have enough money to travel to that new place you want to go travel to and speak to this group. It could be a million different things. But if you don't show that you still have some kind of need for their ongoing support and money, they're going to stop giving.
Right.
And they're going to need to know where you still need help and where you can be promoted. And sometimes it's not going to be money. Sometimes it's going to be time or talent. And maybe one of that talents is them sharing their email list with you or sending one of your emails on behalf of them, and they'll send it to their email list, which might be way more valuable than the $500 donation, $5,000 donation that you were asking
right.
for, because now you gained this whole other group, this whole other audience. So don't just take email lists as nonchalantly. They are very specific. They can be very pointed, but you must be sure that you're focusing in the right area.
Yeah, if you never ask for anything, it's weird. You'll hardly ever get anything. So, also to your first point. So, just in case someone out there is kind of doing this on their own, researching. So the whole concept of having those different types of like categorizing volunteers, people that have donated, people that haven't done anything yet but subscribe. In the email marketing world, that's called segments. And then specifically, if you're using MailChimp, a lot of times they will use tags to create those segments. So if you're on my email list, for example, Travis, I might tag you as I might tag you as not a client, but someone we had some sort of external interaction with. Whatever the case is, if someone becomes a client, I could tag them as a client. For a nonprofit, you could tag someone as a volunteer, board member, recipient of services. Obviously, you got to worry about, you know, privacy laws and all that with that potentially. But having all those tags, that's kind of how you create, you tag people in MailChimp and then create those segments. And then, yeah, you just send the emails specifically to the people that you think they're most appropriate for. Definitely.
I just want to say that I appreciate all the insight that you're giving. I know you teach a class on this. It's a paid for class that people have to actually pay to get this information.
Yes.
We're giving it away for free today, mostly because I bribed you. So I definitely want to say thank you to that. And what I'm looking for from you is, what can we do to help T&S marketing? What can we help to do to bolster your organization? Where are you looking at to be in a few years? How can we help you out?
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So T&S online marketing. So number one, I'll share, I'm sure you'll have this online also, but our website is tandsgo.com. So that's tandsgo.com. Definitely want to talk to nonprofits that think they can't afford a good website. So that's probably step one. If you run a nonprofit and your immediate thought when I was talking about that earlier or right now is, well, there's no way I can afford to, you know, hire Tim and his team. You might not be able to, but you might be wrong. You might be able to. So you're making a little bit of an assumption there. I would love to talk with you regardless. In fact, we talk to people all the time that it turns out we're not a good fit for some reason, but I'm able to steer them in whatever direction that they are a good fit. So if you've thought, oh, I couldn't afford that, talk to me, email me, call me. My contact information's on the website. Either way, I'd be happy to talk to you. So that's number one. Number two, a couple things we do have on our website. Number one, we have a free email newsletter. If this information, I mean, our newsletter is based around giving out free marketing information. And the idea is, if people decide they don't want to do it themselves or they need help with it, then they reach out and contact us because we're the ones that provided it in the first place. So would love if you go kind of look through our blog. That's typically the stuff we're sending out in our email newsletter. So if that looks like good, helpful information, then go ahead and subscribe to the newsletter. We do have a premium email newsletter that's paid. So that's a $500 one-time investment. And that newsletter is actually much shorter, but it's directly applicable thing. So we're sharing digital marketing tactics and tools that you can generally apply pretty quickly to your business when they make sense. And not every single newsletter makes sense for every, you know, organization, obviously. But that is a paid newsletter option. But again, if you're just like, no, I want my feet wet, the blogs were helpful, then go ahead and sign up for the email newsletter that we email our blog on.
That's awesome. Definitely going to have those links in the show notes. And I'm definitely going to have links to your books. Looks like you got a handful of books here on Amazon. I'm going to throw links in there so people can go directly and get some insight from you, whether it's online, blogging, or something else. Do get a little tip from you, Tim. And thank you so much for being on the show today. Can't wait to hear more and see what you're doing in the future.
Yep. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Travis.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.